training camps open up, well, they open up less than 24 hours as we are recording this on September 21st. It's a Tuesday. Training camps open up Wednesday. It's the At The Rink podcast. Sean Rourke, my co-pilot. Let's bring him right in. Sean, first off, let's just point this out. You are recording this from the new NHL office, which I was in last week and is swanky, to say the least. It's very nice. So I want your little opinion on that, but your level of excitement here is training camps are set to open Wednesday.
First of all, it's palatial.
Yes.
The term you were looking for. One Manhattan West. For those that don't know New York City, it's a block and a half behind Madison Square Garden. So I took New Jersey Transit in for the first time in 18 months, got off at Penn Station, and I got to tell you, I was a little fired up.
Well, I don't know that I've ever been fired up to be in Penn Station, but okay. You know.
Dude, it's empty. It's awesome.
It is empty. It is awesome. And the beauty of it is the office is really just like a block away from Madison Square Garden, which is really nice. EJ Raddick joins us from NHL Network. EJ, first off, I think this might be your first time on the After Rink podcast. So welcome.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah, you've done your best to keep me off.
We have.
I finally weaseled my way in.
He's a longtime listener, first time caller.
That's right.
There you go.
All right, Ej. So tell me about what you're feeling here as training camps are about to get underway here. It got so fast. It feels like the cup was just awarded.
Yeah, well, we're on this kind of crazy schedule we've been on for what, like 16, 18 months now? It's been kind of a weird timing. It's going to be nice. I guess for me, it's nice. I don't know. Maybe not everybody agrees. I think it's nice to have our old divisions back. So I kind of know what's going to be going on with that. And teams are going to play each other and they're not going to be locked in these little 18 pods. So that's pretty nice. It has come up quick. There's a lot, as usual, as you guys know, there's a million storylines and guys that are not signed and injuries and new coaches and new faces and new places. So all those different things are going on, and you guys have a new office there at the NHL, which I do. I've seen some of the photos. It looks terrific. So there's a lot happening, and it's going to be happening over the next couple of weeks leading up to opening night on October 12th.
And you think about all the storylines that are out there, restricted free agents, you know, who's going to report, who's not, guys that have asked to be traded, Tarasenko, and so on and so forth. So there's going to be no shortage of news in those first 2 days.
The question that I have, probably the biggest one that I have going in as we talk right now, is what about Kirill Kaprizov? And is he going to, there's a lot of guys, like Sean, you mentioned, there's a lot of guys out there. Kaprizov it being so vitally important to the Minnesota Wild, we know the Calder Trophy and all that, and that team feeling as though it can be a contender, they got to get this guy under contract. And it's been going on for a while. And Billy Guerin's been quite, you know, talkative about it, basically saying like you can't hold out and expect that you're going to or hold out or not show up for training camp, whatever you want to look at it, and expect that you're going to be able to jump right in. If you miss however many days that you miss, it's hard to catch up once everybody is in. And I know we could talk about Jack Eichel and that situation and Vladimir Tarasenko in that situation. The Eichel situation, look, he's not going to play right away. So it, as crazy as it is with the Sabres, it's not going to impact them necessarily on the ice. Kaprizov impacts them, the Wild, on the ice. So I just look at that one and say, to me, that's one of the biggest storylines that I am looking at as we enter training camps here, is what's going to happen, EJ, with Kirill Kaprizov?
Yeah, it's a fascinating situation. I mean, you got to say one thing right away. Billy Guerin, I mean, he's the sheriff in Minnesota. There's no question about that. He's come in, he's made a lot of big decisions, and you may like him, you may not like some of the decisions, but he's made the hard decisions. I mean, to buy out Parisi and Suter, I mean, that took incredible guts, and really he must have really told ownership, hey, it has to be this way, because the dead money, it's not this year, as you guys know, but, you know, in the coming couple of years after that, they're going to have a lot of dead money they're going to have to deal with. And I think that's what goes into this negotiations with Kaprizov. It's not about fitting him this year, but he's going to want a multi-year contract. Maybe he's going to want as many as an 8-year contract. And they've got to worry about all that dead money and then having other players fit in around him. He's a terrific player. He's fun to watch. He's dynamic. I've never been one to believe that you build championship teams on the wing. So, you know, to me, that would be a consideration. But Billy Guerin's not folding his 10 here. Like a lot of guys that would have been in the situation would have probably, you know, kind of taken a knee and said, here, I mean, we'll give you what you want and we're going to move on. But he's made some hard decisions. So I'm not exactly sure how it's going to play out, guys. I know they need him. But, you know, again, I think Billy understands how to build a championship team. So there has to be some limitations for a guy that has been good, but he's only played one season in this league.
That would be my concern, too. But what I find most interesting is the position Billy's in. And he mentioned it to our colleague, Tom Glitty. He's like, I know what Kirill's doing. I know what he wants. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wanted it when I played. I held out. And it killed me. He held out against Lou, which is probably the hardest thing in the world to do. Lou Lamoriello. He did it and he came back and he had one of his worst years. So, you know, he's looking at it as a player and he's saying, hey, we have this situation and I'm telling you for your career, it's not good for you to show up late. It's going to impact you and you're going to play poorly. There's no way around it, especially as condensed as everything has been leading up to this and as condensed as everything will be in the season. He is going to be behind and Billy knows that.
And yeah, because he's been there. And I think this is one of the key parts of having a former player who had a long career in charge of these types of things. Like they understand, right, what's going on here. And like you said, Sean, he knows exactly what he's doing. And he has been there. He understands what Kaprizov would be going through. And I'll go back to my original. Like, he's just so vitally important to what they do. I know he's only had 1 year in the league. A slow start for Kirill Kaprizov could mean a slow start for the Minnesota Wild. And you get off to a slow start in that division, the Central Division, as EJ mentioned. Like, look, the divisions are back together now, right? If you get off to a slow start in that division, there's a lot of parity there. I probably after Colorado, there's a lot of parity there. When you look at the next slate of teams, Minnesota's in that next slate of teams. A slow start could, in theory, mean they don't make the playoffs because that's really what you're looking at there in the Central Division.
You know, it's funny, Dan, and we talk about, you know, Billy Guerin, you know, telling him and he's been public, you know, hey, I went through this. I understand. I think, you know, we've all three of us have been around this game a long time. And we've all seen this movie play out where guys report late, come in late. They don't play well. You saw the whole Nylander thing in Toronto, right? He waited until December, came in, never could really catch up that year. It is kind of a lost year. So there's no question Billy Guerin, in my mind, at least my experience tells me, he's likely to be right about that. But the question is, when you're Kirill Kaprizov, you're, you know, 25, 26 year old young guy, your agent is talking to you. You want the money. You want to get what you're worth. And I'm sure Billy Guerin, you go back to Billy Guerin at that age dealing with Lou, I'm sure there were people who were telling him, hey, just come in, get it done. And, you know, you're a different person when you're a younger person and you're at the height of things and everybody wants you. And, you know, in Kaprizov's case, he's got this option to go play in the KHL on a shorter term thing, just to kind of keep playing and making some money. So I think we all look at it as people who've covered this game for a long time. And Billy looks at it as someone who lived it. But this is why these things happen, because when you're younger and you know, you're listening to different sources and you want the money, I mean, you're willing to hold on and do something different. So we'll see how it plays out. I think you're right, Dan. They don't need to get off to a slow start for sure. He'll impact that. But they've got a lot of challenges there in Minnesota, I think, long-term, because they've got to figure a way around this dead money in coming years, and that is going to play into the deals that they have to make coming up.
We can talk about Minnesota, but the other place I think you need to look is Vancouver. Yeah. They got a double whack. Mm-hmm. They got to get Pedersen and Hughes under contract. And you want to talk about a team that's desperate to get off to a quick start after the year that they had last year. And those are two incredibly vital guys. I mean, Pedersen didn't play up to his standards, but there's no question about his pedigree. And Hughes makes everything happen for them. Everything. If he's not around, you know, what do they do? And are they looking at another year like last year? So, you know, I don't envy what Vancouver's got to do in the next couple of weeks.
I have less concern about them getting those guys in and into the mix than I do about Kaprizov, because they don't have the other carrot, you know, the carrot at the other end of the stick here with the KHL. These guys, they have the NHL. That's it. This is what they want. This is where they want to be. Yeah. And they know how, you know, what they mean to that franchise. To me, Vancouver getting those two guys signed, let's just assume they get those two guys in, and they very well could by the time those guys, you know, the teams are expected to walk through the door on Wednesday. We're recording this Tuesday. let's assume they get those guys in. They're my dark horse team in the West. I look at them and I say they had a bad year. We know they had a bad year. They couldn't. There were so many. They could barely have the puck. They were giving up so many shots on goal. They gave up a lot of goals. It was amazing to me. They gave up 3.34 goals per game. And yet Thatcher Demko had a 9.15 save percentage, you know, in 35 games. So he was facing a lot of shots and he was pretty good. They got to cut that down a little bit. I think they'll get a hungry Oliver Ekman-Larsson. They get a real solid Connor Garland. Demko's the number one. Jason Dickinson's your third center. And you get Pettersson back healthy, assuming he signs, you get him back healthy. Hughes with another year under his belt. I look at Van, and I like Travis Green as a coach too. I think he's a good coach. He didn't become a bad coach last year. He was all of a sudden, yeah. He was a good coach. He didn't become a bad coach. You know, yeah. I like Vancouver as a team out West, you know, in the Pacific, which really, I mean, you're looking at one team and then just wide open after that. So they're a dark horse team for me based on all that. But you, of course, I mean, EJ, you got to get, you know, Pettersson and Hughes in there.
You got to get them signed. I mean, I guess we're getting to, you know, we're talking about this. Camps are going to open. Deadlines create pressure, right?
Yep.
And the pressure ends up getting guys signed. I mean, it seems like, you know, there might be the trending. What you're hearing is maybe they're looking at bridge deals for those guys, which would probably make sense for where Vancouver is at right now, maybe for those players themselves. But I'm going to assume, again, like you, Dan, that they are going to get done. It's just a question of when, because if it happens closer to opening night and, you know, now all of a sudden we just talked about it, getting yourself into shape, get playing catch up, getting ready for the season. I don't think that's something that the Vancouver Canucks want to do coming off a bad year last year. That is the biggest problem for teams that have struggled the year before. You want everybody on board. You want to have that energy and start everybody running at the same time within your group. So I think it's imperative for them to try to get that done. You know, obviously we're taping today in the next 24, 36 hours to try to get everybody on the same page. But, you know, you talk about in the West about teams that I think have a chance to be better. I'm going to keep my eye on the LA Kings this year because they went out and got Phil Deneau. They have Anze Kopitar. They have young Quentin Byfield there. I got it interesting to see how they're going to use him. But that's three pretty good centers down the middle that, you know, you might be. And three guys that are in different parts of their career, right? I mean, Kopitar is further along. Deneau is kind of in the middle. And then Byfield is at the beginning. But, you know, they've added Deneau. They have a lot of young players that I think are ready to take a step. The Pacific Division is kind of wide open, with the exception there of the Golden Knights, who we think are pretty strong. So I'll be curious to see if LA, I mean, those teams have been rebuilding now for a couple of years, LA, Anaheim, you know, in particular. So I'll be curious to see if LA, with that move into free agency now, can make a step in a division where there's opportunity.
We talked about the Pacific last week, like, anybody can come out of there because you're really talking about maybe two teams for four spots. So you put the other six teams in the back end, you know, because we talked about Seattle and who did they have to beat out to get in there. So, you know, I think if you're an odds maker looking to hedge your bet and say, I'm going to take a long shot, I think you go somewhere in the Pacific and you say, this is my long shot because they got the best opportunity to kind of fit their way into what that playoff picture is going to be. When you look at each of the other three divisions and you say, well, where's that wiggle room? There's tons of wiggle room in the Pacific. So, you know, out West for me, I think it's going to be Chicago. The team that's going to surprise people. Look, I don't think you can ever discount Jonathan Toews's impact, especially if he's healthy and he's back from whatever issues he had last year. Patrick Kane said he felt better. He dealt with a wrist injury last year, or an unspecified injury somewhere, it seems, in the wrist area. You know, and I know people are looking at Jones and saying, well, he's not that good. He's pretty good.
He's really good.
He's pretty good. Really, I mean, good. The analytics numbers might not be where people want him. I'll take him for 25 minutes on my blue line and call it an upgrade. And then they have Marc-Andre Fleury. So, you know, I think they're going to be way more competitive than people think.
2 years ago, they were going to sign Crawford. Then they decided not to. Then they're going with young goalies. Now they're going with a veteran goalie again. And now they, you know, it just, they got a lot of stuff going on in Chicago, guys. So I'll be curious, though. And I love Seth Jones. I think he's a terrific player. They've added a couple of players around him that are from, obviously, his brother, Caleb. They've added the McCabe kid who played with him at the World Juniors in 2013 from Buffalo, was hurt last year. So maybe he's someone that could come in and be a guy that can help them on the blue line as well. But, you know, they got Kane, and they've got, you know, DeBrincat is a good scorer. Taze is coming back. I don't know what's going to happen with Jonathan Taze, because that's one of the weirdest stories. I've been covering sports, as you guys have, for a long time. And to see a superstar player just kind of disappear and nobody really knew what happened or what the story was, you know, was kind of crazy. So I'll be really curious to see how Jonathan Taze performs this year.
I think with Chicago, guys, the changes there, bringing in the players they brought in, Seth Jones, Marc-Andre Fleury, Jake McCabe, and having who and getting Taves back, assuming he's back ready to go at some point. And you got the Kane, you got Kirby Dach ready to take the next step too. There's a lot there. I think that puts Jeremy Colleton right on the hot seat. I mean, he has a team now, you know, like that's the thing, right? Like he's got a team that should by its roster be able to be a compete for that playoff spot in the Central, which, you know, I mean, I was talking about it with Minnesota after Colorado, it's a jumble there. You know, I mean, there's a lot of parity there between Winnipeg and Nashville and Minnesota and Dallas and Chicago. I mean, there's a lot, St. Louis, there's a lot of parity there. And I think Chicago can be right there. I agree with you, Sean, that they can be. And I think it puts Jeremy Colleton right in that spot it's now time to perform, right? I mean, EJ, right? Like now it's time to perform.
There's no question. It's an expectations game for coaches. I mean, you see it in, you know, the situation in Detroit with Jeff Blashill, right? Like he has been able to kind of be one of the longer tenured coaches in this league, despite not having a good record, because they've been in a complete rebuild and the expectations have been low for the team. So they've been willing to stay with them. And I think Jeremy Colleton got brought in by Stan Bowman, a tough act to follow, Joel Quenneville. He was a young coach. He's kind of, you know, he's been in that situation, but now I think the expectations now are going to be higher and, you know, with some veteran players there. So that's one of those teams. I agree with you, Dan. I think if they get off to a slow start and really struggle out of the gate, I wouldn't be surprised if they pull the trigger and try to bring in somebody, you know, an experienced guy to come in there and try to right the ship, because the window is small for guys like Kane and Taze now, right? I mean, they're into their 30s, and Kane continues to defy the laws of science because he keeps getting better. But the bottom line is that can't go on forever, and you got Marc-Andre Fleury, who's an older goaltender there. So I think you're absolutely right. Another team a team I like in that division this year to bounce back is Dallas, because I really, you know, I love Merrill Haskin. He's one of my favorite players. I'm wondering what they're going to do with Klingberg. He's at the end of his deal. They brought in Suter. I think that's a nice spot for Suter. He's not in a situation financially there where he has to be the leader. He can come in and just play. Hopefully that'll be a smooth transition for him. I think with Sagan coming back, they've got a couple of guys in goal. They're waiting on Ben Bishop. Who knows if he's ever going to get right again. But they've got Holpe, they've got Hudobin. I like Ottinger. I think he played well last year. So for me, the Dallas Stars, a year removed, remember they went to the final 2 years ago, I think they're a team that if they could stay healthy, they could make a push this year.
You know who in that division is going to give everybody fits is Winnipeg.
Yeah.
Right? They're coming
back. Made some good additions on defense.
Yeah, they're coming back into the division from being in the North Division. Schmidt on defense, a couple other guys on defense, make them better for sure. I think, you know, we had a story on our site the other day with Pierre-Luc Dubois at Player Media Tour talking about his season and how he never got on track, and he's ready to show that he's a player. Both sides of that trade need to show that they're the players they were worth trading each other for. Right now they are, because neither one of them is very good. But when you think about the blockbuster that it was, you know, he needs to be better, and he's acknowledged he needs to be better. I think Connor Hellebuck's the best goalie in that division. And that's a huge part of this whole thing. I don't think, because of the change in Colorado and their goaltending, I don't think those two teams are that far apart.
I'll be curious to see what goes on in Colorado this year. Again, high expectations, right, guys? And, you know, I thought they might try to get in on Seth Jones and to try to add them to the mix and try to make a real big push. Because remember, Nathan MacKinnon's contract, slowly the time is slowly ticking away until that really great bargain that they have there, Nathan MacKinnon, is no longer going to be a great bargain. He's going to be a free agent. He's going to get a lot of money. And I don't know, with the deals they've already made, where, what position they're going to be in to keep him. When you think they've got Makar, they just signed Landeskog, they have Rantanen. I mean, they have some big ticket contracts there, and they're very fortunate that they were able to get McKinnon when they did. The circumstances worked out good for them to get him on that deal. So when I look at the Colorado Avalanche, I'm concerned because they haven't really got, well, they haven't gotten past the second round despite all these expectations. Right. And now the window, even though the age window is fine, the window of that contract for Nathan McKinnon is going to start to come into play. So for me, I think there's a lot of pressure in Colorado as well to kind of figure things out quicker than maybe they were hoping.
You know what? You're right. I agree with you. I still just,
of course I'm right, Dan. Come on.
Been around
me long
enough
to know.
Yeah. Well, maybe it'll be the only time all year I'll say you're right. I just look at that team and I just, there's so much there that's so hard to contain. That's the thing, you know, like it's so hard to contain McKinnon and Rantanen and Landeskog and Makar and Gerard and all that. And I think Kemper's a good goaltender. And, but the thing, you know, there's question there because they lost some pieces from that team that were pretty important pieces. Brandon Saad, you know, Jonas Donskoy was an important piece. And obviously Philip Grubauer was an important piece, but they're still, to me, a notch, maybe even a bigger notch ahead of the other teams in the Central. But EJ, I wanted to go back to something you mentioned earlier about Dallas, because I'm fascinated to see how this three goalie situation is going to work out in Dallas. And if not four, if Ben Bishop ever gets healthy, right? Because, you know, you look, the way I see this potentially playing out here is Ottinger's to stay. Ottinger's not going, right? Because he, I think, is the guy that they target as the goalie of their future. But then you've got Braden Holtby and you've got Anton Hudobin. And we know what Anton Hudobin has done for Dallas and what he means to that team and has meant to that team. But if one of those, to me, it's a battle between those two guys, and then one of them could be traded. You know, you look around the league and you say, all right, where is there a team that might need some help in net? I mean, it'd be weird to trade him into the division, but I Winnipeg is a team that needs, they don't really have a backup behind Connor Hellebuck, you know. Calgary really doesn't have a backup behind Jacob Markstrom. And, you know, you guys know this. You need your backup goalie or your number two goalie or your 1B, whatever you want to call him. He's got to, if you want to be a legitimate playoff contender, he's got to play 30 to 35 games, and he's got to win you 15 probably, you know, in that neighborhood of 10 to 15 games to really get there. And they got three guys there. I just think Ottinger is, he's not going anywhere. The thing with Ottinger is, I guess he, you know, they don't have to use him a lot right now.
I think he is able to be sent to the minors still, I believe. So, I mean, I'll have to go double check that. But I believe that's part of it, that they can still get him down to play in the minors without having to clear waivers. But again, I'll have to double check.
But he was
that
good last year.
That has to be the thinking, right? Because you sign Holtby and you have Hudobin. I mean, you're right. I agree with you. I think Ottinger, for me, guys, he's ready to take that next spot.
Yeah.
Ottinger's you're still waiting on Ben Bishop. But I don't, like I said, I don't know if Ben Bishop, when he's ever going to, if he's ever going to play again at this point.
And the other thing that, and I think Dallas management is a little bit ahead of the curve here that you have to worry about is COVID.
Yeah.
Your goalie gets COVID. Like, I wouldn't be surprised, because there's no taxi squad this year that we had last year. Yeah. You know, there's been a little bit of talk about maybe a goalie exemption where you can keep a third goalie on your roster and he doesn't count. Yeah. Something like that, because it's going to be really hard to get goalies up and down, you know. Uh-huh. You're looking at an e-bug if it happens on the day of the game. So, you know, you carry that third goalie and he's kind of your protection for what happens during the season, and to have the luxury of having Holtby be that third goalie.
Yeah.
If something were to happen, it is incredibly fortunate if you can afford it under the salary cap. So I think that's a little bit of it. I think it's like having closers in baseball, right? Relief pitchers in baseball, or quarterbacks in the NFL. Like, you could never have enough of them because you don't know when you're going to need them.
You know, Sean, it's funny. Last year when we would talk during the season, I remember in the run-up, because it was such a unique season, I said, goalies, it's going to be so interesting to watch the goalies, and it would be better to have more, just like to your point. And Dan, you mentioned it before too, is that guys are playing, like, you know, teams really look at those numbers now, and they don't really want their starting goalie, their number one guy, to play maybe more than 50 games anymore. Because you look at how teams have success in the playoffs, normally it's a guy, unless it's a Superman like Vasilevsky, I mean, it's normally it's a guy that hasn't been overly taxed in the regular season. So I think that, you know, I think you're onto something, Sean. I think it's probably smart for Dallas to, you know, to kind of get ahead of things and to have those guys available, because they always, there's always currency there. There's always going to be somebody looking for a veteran goalie to come in and help them at some parts of the year. So I think that you're almost better off having that full hand of guys to choose from, as opposed to scrambling late. So it's interesting that Holtby would go there. So I would love to have heard the conversation with Jim Neal and Braden Holtby about what, you know, about like what it's, how it's going to play out there, because Holtby is going to go there, and maybe, who knows, maybe he stays there, maybe he doesn't. And I'll turn a little bit with, you know, now that we're talking about Holtby, I was shocked that the Philadelphia Flyers didn't try to get in on Holtby as a number two guy. I was really stunned that they signed Martin Jones. Martin Jones is a terrific guy. I had him on our show a bunch of times. He's had an interesting career. He took a team to a cup final. It's been a struggle over the last couple of years. I would have thought of all the places Martin Jones to kind of go and resuscitate his career, Philadelphia would be the last one. And behind a young goalie there who is really there are the hopes of that franchise are on Carter Hart. It was a little bit fragile last year. I would have thought Holtby, as someone that has a connection, a little bit of a connection with Carter Hart personally, would have been a guy. He's played in the East. He understands the market and the environment there. I thought he would have been a good number two guy for Philly. They opted for Martin Jones. We'll see if they're right as we move forward, because as you guys point out, they're going to have to play.
Yeah. You know, the thing with Holtby, just thinking about it now, EJ, is maybe he went to Dallas, even understanding that there's two other guys there, thinking he's got a better chance to play more games in Dallas than he does in Philadelphia, simply because, like you said, Carter Hart is the guy. He's the future. Yeah. He's the now. He's the future, right, for Philadelphia. But Marty Jones, I think it's going to be really interesting with Philly. They revamped everything around the goaltending. You know, they revamped their D. Obviously, Ryan Ellis, Rasmus Ristolainen are in now. They made the trade to get Cam Atkinson, a goal scorer, as opposed to moving out in that trade Jacob Voracek, more of a playmaker. So they revamped a lot of things there. And Carter Hart's got to have a better year than he had last year.
No question.
Let's be honest. He's playing. He should, in theory, be playing behind a better D than he was last year. Marty Jones could be a really interesting, solid 1B, but just giving him less playing time and not without the pressure of having to be the backbone of a team, which he, you know, had to be in San Jose and was successfully for a little bit. Let's not forget.
Yeah.
I mean,
he was successful. He was terrific early on. There's no question about it. It's been a couple of years, though, guys, where the numbers – now, again, the team in front of him wasn't always great. But I'm a night owl. I stay up and watch those games, and boy, it was a struggle. So I'll be curious to see what happens with Marty Jones. I wish him nothing but the best. I hope it goes well for him in Philadelphia. And as you say, Dan, Carter Hart is going to play a ton, but he's not going to play every night. And if he has some struggles like he had last year, and you got to lean on Marty Jones a little bit, is he capable? We'll find out.
Well, I think he's one of those guys that needs goaltending coaching. Like, there's goalies in this league that just roll out every 2 days and say, I'm ready, here we go. There's other guys that need time and practice. They need repetition. And I think he's one of those guys. But we have actually some breaking news going on about Philly while we're talking.
All right.
Hayes out 6 to 8 weeks.
Oh.
Which is a huge blow for them.
Whoa. Yeah. That is huge. That is a huge blow. And again, another division. Metropolitan Division, a slow start could really doom you. And you're talking about Sean. It's interesting to bring that up. I mean, I didn't see that. You talk about Kevin Hayes, you know, such a valuable two-way centerman for them. That is a significant blow, irreplaceable, you know, at this point, with what Kevin Hayes can bring that team. Sean Couturier obviously is probably their best two-way centerman, but Kevin Hayes is a really good number two there. I guess that means you probably have to move Claude Giroux back to the middle, I would imagine, right?
Yeah, I would think so. It's tough news for the Flyers. It's been obviously a very, very painful time in the Hayes family, the passing of Kevin's brother, Jimmy, over the summer. And now he has, you know, an injury issue. So, I mean, I don't know what could be going through the mind of Kevin right now, but we wish him certainly nothing but the best, a speedy recovery. And for the Flyers, you're right. I mean, they were hoping to get off to a good start this year with the changes they made, bringing in, you know, Ristolainen from Buffalo and bringing Ryan Ellis from Nashville and making some changes to their group. And this certainly is something that's going to make that a little more difficult.
Yeah, Alain Vigneault just announced that he had his preseason or his pre-opening of camp press conference today, said that he felt something skating yesterday, had surgery today.
Wow.
And but the other thing I found interesting he talked about was, one, he said he really liked the way that the team was remade, what Chuck Fletcher did, you know, during the offseason. But he also talked about just a culture change.
Yeah.
And we're all approximately the same age. Dan's a little more young,
than
us. But we grew up, EJ, and it didn't matter how good or bad the Flyers were. You never, ever wanted to go into their building.
Yeah.
You never wanted them to come into your building. And I don't think that's the case anymore. There is no more vengeance now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a different era for sure. You're absolutely right. I remember, I've heard you, Sean, you've heard the stories of guys who get the Philly flu.
Yeah.
You know, they, you know, I remember hearing the stories from the old Rangers, like guys like Dave Maloney and some of that vintage Rangers. They'd say they'd get on that bus trip from New York to Philly, and at the start of the trip, the bus was lively and people were joking and laughing and having fun. And as that bus went down 95 and got closer to Philly, it got eerily quiet as they got closer, because guys knew they were going into, you know, into a place where they didn't necessarily want to be. But it's, the game has changed, and certainly that's changed for Philly. And it's interesting, right? You talk about a culture change with the same coaching staff, right? Usually when there's a culture change, you know, Joel Quenneville went into Florida to create a culture change down there. And over the course of 2 years, with the help of Bill Zito, they were able to do it. We'll see if they can carry that forward this year. In Philadelphia, they're going forward with making some changes to their group. And now, you know, you hear Alain Vigneault talk about a culture change. But I'll tell you one thing. They got to be harder to play against, and they got to defend way better. Because, Dan, you saw it covering the Rangers a lot,
yep,
seeing some of those games. And there was other games the Flyers played last year. Boy.
Soft.
Easy to play against, and they did not defend.
Soft. And look, their D is should be better. I mentioned that before. Their D should be better with the additions they've made, especially with Ellis and Rasmus Ristolainen. But Sean, like you said, a culture change.
Hey, hold on. Let me get in here. What do you think? What do you guys think of Ristolainen? Because that's a bone of contention for everybody. Everybody thought Buffalo made this great deal and the numbers with Ristolainen are tricky. I'm of the mind that people get an asterisk when they leave Buffalo. What do you guys think about Ristolainen? How do you think he's going to fit in with the Flyers?
Look, I'll tell you what I think. I think he's a great defenseman. I really like him. I think anytime you got a guy that can skate and think the game like he does, you go for him. Putting him in Philly scares the living daylights out of me just because he's got no runway. Yeah. Game two, he makes a bad pass.
Yeah.
He's going to be public enemy number one. Like, you put him somewhere where he can be sheltered a little bit and people aren't like kind of looking at him and being like, oh, well, we traded for this guy. He's got to be the next Brian Leetch.
Yeah.
Like, that's going to be the expectation. And I don't know if he hits it right away. And you wonder, after the way that he's been beat up mentally in his whole time in Buffalo, if he walks into there, has a couple of bad games and says, oh, here we go again. That's my concern more than his skill level.
I think he left Buffalo going freedom. You know, basically, you know, like, oh, here we go. We got a chance here. Finally, you know, we're not going to be rebuilding upon rebuilding upon rebuilding and all that. And I got a young goalie who's the hot young thing in Philadelphia here. And he's playing behind me. And I've got, you know, these stars up front and everything. And, oh, we got Ryan Ellis as well. I think that's got to be great for him mentally. I also think, well, I know, he's a 6'4", 220-pound defenseman who's 26 years old, about to turn 27. Yeah. And he's ideally, he's just coming into his best years as a defenseman. Yeah. So, and with that size, I love him. I think he can be a really solid top-pair defenseman for that team. But like you said, Sean, it's Philly. There's no runway for him, but that's got to motivate him. Like, I think that's got to be the thing that he basically says, I got to prove it now. And you hope that he's got that mentality, right, EJ?
Yeah, you guys are scaring me now. I mean, Sean is,
it's not the first time that's
happened. Sean has laid out the scenario that doesn't scare you for sure. I just look, like I said, I have a, when guys leave a situation like Buffalo has been over the last couple of years, I think I have to give them a little bit of an, like I said, an asterisk almost in that to give them a chance to kind of restart their career. We saw it with Ryan O'Reilly, right? I mean, Ryan O'Reilly got beat up in Buffalo. He was talking about, he was being honest. I'm losing my love for the game. The team struggled. And he turns around, he goes to St. Louis in a 1 year. Now he went into a great situation, but Conn Smythe winner, Stanley Cup champion, had a great run. Now he's the captain of the Blues. I mean, guys don't get bad. You know, that's like you talked about before. Travis Green didn't just become a bad coach overnight. And I think that Ristolainen, big, strong, right shot defenseman. He's got some speed. There's a lot of good things in his game. And, you know, I think he gets into a situation where he's supported better. I think he could be a really helpful player. So we'll see if the roll of dice paid off for Chuck Fletcher in Philly. I like him as a player, but to the point you guys both made, it's like, you know, I think in Philly this year, they kind of needed to get off to a good start. And now with this news about Kevin Hayes being out 6 to 8 weeks right off the bat, it does, you know, it just makes you wonder.
EJ, I have another question for you, but before I get to that, I don't know if you've ever driven to Philly with Dan, but it's the same phenomenon. You go down 95 and he's chatting and all of a sudden you're going over the Betsy Ross Bridge and he's silent. Well, I don't know what it is. I don't know if there's a writer that intimidates him or what happens, but
yeah, dead he's always silent. Been a little frightened by Wayne Fish. I can't explain it. Wayne, I've always found to be a nice guy.
I'm very frightened by people who like running.
Yeah, that's
so, but
and he does.
EJ, let me ask you another captain question that I found really interesting. The New York Rangers.
Yeah.
You have a guy on that team who comes out and says, I don't want to be the captain.
Yeah.
It's too much work. I mean, when you boil down and look, it's a report from a foreign language newspaper, but that's the way it's been reported across the board, that there's language issues, that you can't just go out and play. It's not just about taking pictures. You have to rally the boys during intermission. And these are the things that Panarin said. Like, if you're sitting in that locker room or you're his coach, are you like, what's going on here?
Well, I don't know. I think a couple things. I think the Rangers really never had any intention of making Panarin the captain. So I think that's the first thing to think about. So for the player, if he's asked about it, you know, maybe it's his way to say, well, I don't really want to be the captain anyway, knowing that he's probably not one of the guys in the mix. He brings so much to the table. Artemi Panarin just got to do what he does. And there are other people to lead and to have that, to handle that mantle. Maybe he was just being honest and straightforward. But as long as he does the things he does, he will lead with his play on the ice. And we saw a couple of years ago when he got to the Rangers, the numbers with him on the ice and him off the ice were, I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen anything as dramatic as those numbers were. So he's got to come in and just do the things that he does well. They've obviously changed the mix with the Rangers, new coach, new manager, some new pieces to the puzzle, trying to be tougher to play against. If Artemi Panarin just comes in and is the Artemi Panarin, then the Rangers, I think, will be fine. But that's one of those teams too, right? Look at all this energy they've built, right, with some acquisitions and a new coach. And if they can get that plane off the runway into the air right in that first month of the season, now all of a sudden you've got a lot to work with and to build on. So I'll be curious to see how things start for the Rangers. But, Sean, I you know, it's, he's kind of an odd bird, and he's said some odd things over the years. But as long as he plays the way he plays, I think that the Rangers will be okay. When he doesn't, they'll probably be less okay because they're paying him a lot of money.
You know what, guys? EJ, I think you just said it. Artemi Panarin has his own way. Like, he has his own way of doing things. It's not a bad way. It's not. But he's not a guy who's going to stand up in the room and say a bunch of things. He's not a guy who wants to be the voice of the team or the face of the team in front of the cameras. English is the biggest issue there. I think English is the biggest issue all around. He's comfortable in what he does. And what he does is, by the way, the most talented player on the team and the most important player on the team, in my opinion. Because you mentioned it, EJ, what it was like with him without him on the ice and what he's like. They may make the playoffs last season if he doesn't miss those 9 or 10 games, right?
Possible.
So, I mean, who knows if what happens if that's the case, but I don't think, like you said, EJ, they had any intention of giving him the captaincy. I think it comes down to four guys. It comes down to Jacob Trouba, Mika Zibanejad, Chris Kreider, and Adam Fox, who we had on the podcast last week. And I'll toss this out to you guys. I think it's Adam Fox. I think Adam Fox is the guy that should get it. And yes, he's young. Yes, he has not been in the league for a very long time. Yes, he's not signed after this season, right? But he's going to get the big deal. He's going to get the Cale Makar type deal from the Rangers. They're not letting this guy go. He doesn't want to leave. He's from New York. This is his dream. He's living it out. He just won the Norris Trophy. This is a young team. I think you need one of the young voices to be the leader of that team. And I would give really long thought to giving the captaincy to Adam Fox with Trouba and Mika Zibanejad and Kreider as my alternates. I don't even think you need to give Panarin a letter, to be honest with you. I think you just let him play. Just let him do his thing. But I know people will fight back on that. And you guys might fight back on that, that Adam Fox is too young and whatnot. But he's got the respect of the room, and he's got now the respect of the league for anybody new coming into the room, because he has won the Norris Trophy. And he's well-spoken. He can be the guy that's out there. They just had him at the Player Media Tour. You know, like they're putting him out there more. Yeah. And he's a voice of the young players in that room. And I think, I don't know, guys, disagree with me if you want, but he's the guy for me.
I don't understand why they just don't wait. Wait another year. Make sure he's signed. Give him another year. You make a decision now, you might tie somebody up for years. Or you have a Joe Thornton situation where all of a sudden you go to whoever you get. Say you give it to Kreider and you go to him 2 years from now and you'd be like, you know what? Adam Fox is ready. We're going to take this C from you and we're going to give it to him.
Why don't you sign him now and then give it to him? Sign him to the extension.
Fine. Sign him now. But I don't think you can do it with a contract hanging over his head. I think that's wrong. And I don't know. I think he'd be a far more effective leader next year than he is this year. And the little bit I know about the league now, I mean, you look at a guy like in New Jersey, they did this with Heischer, and I think it's kind of weighed on him a little bit. It's hard to navigate the NHL at a really young age. And I know he's done it well, but now, you know, all those things that Panarin talked about that are so hard, you got to put that on top of your plate, on top of what he's doing. If that's the way they're thinking of going, and I look, some of this comes down to the coach. He hasn't seen any of these.
He doesn't know anybody.
Yeah. He doesn't know their personalities.
Yeah.
And coaches want certain kinds of captains.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Gerard Gallant strikes me as a guy who wants a captain who's going to grab somebody by their sweater, put them in their place and say, you do this. This is the way the Rangers play. Is that the guy?
It's not Adam Fox.
He goes out
and he shows you the way to play.
Yeah.
And that's that. And that's fine. But what if that's not what Gallant wants? What if he wants, although he might want that to counteract his persona, right? The good cop, bad cop kind of thing. So it really is an interesting dilemma, but I would just, especially with a new coach and your best player looking for a contract, I would wait. I don't think there's a rush to name a captain.
Yeah, I would tend to wait just because I'd like to see another year out of Fox to see where he is, to see where we are with his contract. I don't think, you know, Zibanejad, who knows what's going to happen there, Dan? I mean, his contract is up, right? He's got, and he wants a lot of money too. So, and then, you know, there's been all this talk about them getting into the Jack Eichel thing, maybe down the road, who knows? But at the end of the day, you got to figure it out what's going to happen, you know, financially for this group moving forward. And, you know, I like Fox as a choice. And if they made him the choice now, I wouldn't be, you know, he's a long-termer there. Mm-hmm. But I do wonder if you maybe wait a year and then see where you're at then.
It's not a bad thought, but they've already talked about, Chris Drury has said basically they want to have a captain this season. He thinks it's time for them to do it. So it doesn't seem to me like they're willing to wait. Now, they could easily give it to Jacob Trouba. And Jacob Trouba was a guy that last year when David Quinn would reference a guy who stood up in the room, a guy who said something, it was always Jacob Trouba. Yeah. So, and you know, so he could get that. But we talked about some dark horse teams in the West. The Rangers are my dark horse team right now in the East. And I think, you know, look, a lot's got to go right. A lot's got to break right here. But I like the additions. Gaudreau, you know, I think is a solid addition. I think Sammy Blake can be a nice fourth line, third line type guy for them. Reeves, you know what he brings. Patrick Nemeth, if he plays on the third pair with a rookie like Nils Lundqvist, he could really be helpful in that capacity. But they're loaded up front in their top six. They need Kako and Lafreniere to take the next step.
Yeah.
And they ideally should, based on where they were drafted, right? Mika is a terrific player. Streaky, but he's a terrific player. Panarin, we know what he is. And I think their goaltending is solid, too, with Shesterkin. To me, and Gallant now, with this style of play, yeah. They're a team that I look at and I say, I look around the rest of the division and I'm like, all right, the Islanders are really good. Washington's good, getting a little old. Pittsburgh won't have their two guys at the start of the season in Crosby and Malkin. That's dangerous. Philly, we just talked about that issue with Kevin Hayes, right? The Devils aren't ready yet. There's Carolina's very good, but the Rangers could be right in that mix in that, you know, 3-4 area in this division. And I think that they are. Adam Fox said it, right, Sean? Adam Fox said it last week on the podcast. If they don't make the playoffs, it will be deemed a disappointing season. So I think they're right there.
Yeah, I mean, they are there. I still have some questions. But, you know, we talked about the West and how wide open it is. I don't think that's the case in the East. I think you go in and you look at 9, maybe 10 teams, and you're like, that's who's going to fight for it. The rest is kind of out of the picture. So when I kind of look at the dark horse for me, and before our hundreds of fans start getting upset and
thousands, millions
and tweeting me at @srook_NHL, my dark horse in that division, and I'm not saying they're going to make the playoffs, is Ottawa. I think Ottawa is going to be a way better team than people think.
That division is interesting, right? Because you had Montreal that went to the Cup final last year and had that great run, but under different circumstances, right? Where are they going to be this year? I mean, they could easily miss the playoffs this year. I mean, even despite the money they've spent and the moves they've made, you got Florida looking to build on what was a terrific season for them. The Lightning, 2-time defending Stanley Cup champs, they're going to be there. The Bruins they're still the Bruins, but they're missing Krejci now. So, and they're getting a little bit older. So where are they? The Leafs, I mean, they got to be thinking they're going to make a push this year. And you know, Sean talks about the Senators. They've got a lot of good young players. I don't know if they're quite ready to take that next big step, but boy, they're going to be fun to watch over the next coming years. So, boy, that's an interesting division right now for me. I'm really curious to see if the Panthers can build on what they did last year. Bill Zito, he nailed every single thing he did. A first-year GM nailed everything he did. And now this offseason, one of the things he did was to bring in Joe Thornton. And I don't know if that was the right way to go, but we'll see.
Sean, Ottawa – I think is the team in that division that will be improved and will be a pain in the butt to play against. Like, I don't think anybody's going to go into Ottawa and be like, all right, we got the Sens tonight. Easy win, right? Easy.
If they get good goaltending, they can be really tricky.
They can be.
That's going to be the question.
I think they could be fifth in that division. Fifth is, you know, because I look at Tampa, Florida, Boston, Toronto. They're the clear top four in that division. I think Montreal is a very interesting team. They have terrific goaltending. We know that Shea Weber's loss is huge. It's a huge loss. And there's other areas there that, you know, did they overplay it last year? Did they do too much? I mean, expectations are not going to be higher because they went to the Stanley Cup final and it's Montreal and all that. Buffalo, we know what they're going to be. I think Detroit, we have an idea. Ottawa could be back in. I mean, Ottawa could be in that mix with Montreal in that 5-6 spot, but I don't see them as a playoff team. But I think that, to John's point, in that division, I think that they are a team that's going to be improved, better with better goaltending, although I don't buy Matt Murray fully right now. And a pain in the butt to play against. But DJ, to your point, Florida can be a real dangerous team.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see what the goaltending situation is there. I think by the end of the year, it'll probably be Spencer Knight, who's came in and looked just terrific for them, came in and played in the playoffs. So if Bobrovsky falls off at all, I think they're comfortable going to Spencer Knight. I just like their group. They get Ekblad back from the injury. I think they're pretty deep. They have, you know what, they play hard now. It's not just kind of go to Florida, winning is great, losing is okay. Now they have a real commitment to go and compete night after night after night. And that's why I say with Joe Thornton, I mean, I just don't know where he fits or what he necessarily brings. to the Florida Panthers that they didn't already necessarily have. So I'll be curious to see how that works out. But I think I got to give Bill Zito a lot of credit. It's very rare in this league, guys. I think that guys come in as first-year general managers with no other head, you know, no other real general managing experience. He was an assistant in Columbus. He was an agent prior to that. But very rarely do they come in and really nail all those different moves. And I think each one was really smart. They were trying to make the team harder to play against and be more competitive, and they accomplished that. We'll see if they can build on it, because sometimes we've seen this in the Panthers, right? They'll have a good year and then they go off the map again. Mm-hmm. They need to build on what they accomplished last year.
Two quick points. Joe Thornton brings joy to the Florida Panthers. And I'm serious. A team, when it becomes a contender, things become serious.
Yeah.
Things become hard. Teams come into your building wanting to beat you as a proving game.
That's true.
Joe Thornton, he keeps a room light. The second thing is, before we circle out of this, we got to circle back to Montreal for 1 minute. And I just want to say, God bless Jonathan Drouin. And the message that he sent this week, coming out and saying, you know, I had anxiety. That's why I walked away from the game last year, right before the playoffs. I was unhealthy. I couldn't deal with this anymore. I needed to get better. I needed to put it before hockey. I needed to put it before my career. That is a powerful message to send from the pulpit he's sending it from.
No question about it. And you know what? I can only speak from my own experience. There's been times when I've dealt with a little bit of anxiety issues and things of that nature. And it is really difficult. And I've been fortunate. It hasn't been something that's overwhelmed me, but I've seen it in my family with other members of my family. And you're right, Sean. I tell you, it's something that it can overwhelm you, and it can look at this. There's a great young athlete with all these things, you know, and yet it overwhelmed him. So let's hope that Jonathan Drouin is better and get back out playing, and sends a message to others to, you know, that we have to keep an eye on these kind of things.
Yeah. Sean, I'm glad you brought that up. I actually think that's a great point to end on right there. Yeah. You know, just, you know, the positive message that Jonathan Drouin sent out, and training camps are opening up. EJ, I give you a last thought. You got a last thought.
All right,
we waited so long to get you finally on the podcast. I think you delivered. I think you've earned your way back on. Sean would have a say in that. I'd like to think for Sean here, and he'll be allowed back.
Don't you think for Sean.
We're going to have to listen
back
to the tape.
At a much higher level than you, Rosen.
We're going to have to listen back to the tape and see the mistakes that he made and the good points, and, you know, make sure he was pulling on the rope like the rest of us, and we'll make a decision whether he comes back.
You
got to
weigh it. That's all right. I can live with that.
All right, good. As long as you can live with it. Anyway, this was a lot of fun, and obviously it's the NHL At the Rink podcast. Get it wherever you get your podcast. You know that. Also, give us some reviews, rate us, give us some reviews, let us know what you're thinking, send us some tweets at The Rink on Twitter, give us some questions. I'm at D Rosen NHL, at Sean Roark _NHL. So enjoy the opening of training camp, communicate with us, we'll communicate back with you on the next podcast, and everybody, look, it's opening up, so hope you're all excited.